This is the Four.
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 Golfers Network Podcast, where we celebrate the greatest game on earth.
Who wants to have some fun?
Your host has been known to spend so much time in the sand, he brings along a chair, shovel, and sunblock. Yes, you can play through. Here's Bill Hobson.
Oh, wow! In your life, have you seen anything like that?
Welcome into another episode of the Four Golfers Network Podcast. I'm Bill Hobson, and actually, this isn't just another episode. This one is really going to be cool. I'll tell you why here in just a moment, but first, if you don't mind, would you please go into iTunes and consider giving us a 5-star rating? We are really trying to grow the audience for the Four Golfers Network podcast, and your ratings will help us turn up higher in search results. If you'll do that, it would be much appreciated, and we also have a little contest for everybody who does give us a rating in iTunes. You'll see the details of that contest in the podcast notes. Take a look. One of my favorite aspects of this great game is digging into the stories not everybody else is exploring. You know, those human touches that inspire are at the top of my list. One of the underreported and underappreciated ways golf touches lives is in the disabled and amputee community. This unique brotherhood recently convened in Michigan's top tourist destination, Frankenmuth, home of world-famous chicken dinners and a fantastic golf course called The Fortress. The big event there was the National Amputee Golf Tournament, and the best amputee golfers in the world were there. I had the chance to watch these guys with one leg, no legs, one arm, and no hands compete and play some very good golf. In fact, there's a viral video right now of Brandon Kanisi birdieing the signature 17th hole, which is a stout par 3 over water, and Brandon, by the way, was born with no hands. So today on the Four Golfers Network podcast, it's my pleasure to visit with Kenny Bontz, Adam Benza, Chad Pfeiffer, and Brandon Kanisi, along with their Michigan-based ringleader, Tracy Raymond. Now, we weren't exactly in a quiet studio, so bear with us. Some of the ambient noise is going to be there, and prepare to be inspired. This is cool stuff. This is the fabric of the game, away from the glare of the lights and the giant novelty checks and names on bags. These guys get it, and golf has helped them in an incredible way. We'll get started with our conversations from the Fortress in 60 seconds on the Four Golfers Network podcast. We've got a free offer for you from our friends at Audible. They are making available to listeners of The Big Impact a free audiobook with no obligation whatsoever. Those are the good kinds of free offers. All you have to do is go to audibletrial.com/bigimpact. And you can choose from over 180,000 titles. You can play them on your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or whatever your MP3 player is. It's one of those really cool free offers from the people at Audible. So once again, it's audibletrial.com/bigimpact. for your free audiobook. If you are looking for a unique way to enjoy the game, you need to come out and watch some very talented players who are doing things that perhaps at one time they wondered if they'd be able to do. I don't know, we'll hear the story. So we're gonna, at this little round table discussion, we're gonna go around the table, have you guys introduce yourselves, where you're from, and then we'll kind of dig into the conversation a little bit. Let me start with you.
I'm Adam Benza from Hellertown, Pennsylvania.
Kenny Bontz from Orlando, Florida.
Better known as the defending champion.
Yes.
And Chad Pfeiffer from Caldwell, Idaho.
All right, so here we are. Everybody has a unique story to tell, right? I don't pretend to know your backgrounds. I know you're pretty good golfers, or you wouldn't have come all the way to Frankenmuth, Michigan to take part in a national championship. And we've got the defending champion over here. So let me start with you. Give us a little bit of background, a little bit of your story. What led to your amputation? Was it a military-related incident, or what was happening in your life?
No, I had Ewing sarcoma at 19,
okay.
And I went through a series of tibia allografts and total knee replacements till I was 34, and I had 6 in total. And I was addicted to painkillers beyond belief, and I decided to cut the leg off and move on from it, and that's what I did.
So at some point, there was a series of discussions and a conscious decision you had to make, right? To say, let's move on?
Absolutely, because if I didn't, I was on a path of destruction.
Because of the painkillers?
Yes.
That's quite a choice to have to make.
Pretty easy.
Really?
Best decision I ever made.
If you hadn't made it, do you think you'd be alive?
I would have been dead in 2 years.
It was that
80
severe.
Bike at the end of the day.
80?
Yep. Along with booze and other stuff. Yeah, it was bad.
So, how old are you now?
I'm 48.
All right, so got almost 30 years of this dealing with amputation, but can you still remember back to when it first happened and you woke up from the surgery?
Like it was yesterday, because I had a dilaudid drip in my arm and I ripped it out because that was the last day I did pain medicine.
Ever?
Ever. And it took me 3.5 months. And I mean, when I took the leg off, I thought it was instantaneous. I would get a prosthetic and I would go. But it took me 3 years to go through it all and think about it and figure it out. And I mean, there was a lot of things I didn't know. And that's why playing in knees is great, because you meet people that have been through whatever you're going through. Everyone has an answer for you, and it's great.
Have a good day. Your turn.
Oh, geez. I was 7 years old when I had cancer, Ewing sarcoma, the same thing that as Kenny did. And that's how we became friends, of playing in the Eastern Regional Golf Tournament. Kind of the same thing as this, but in your own region. That's how I got to know Kenny, and it was the first person that I ever met that lost their limb to cancer. I had it in my right tibia, and a screw got infected. Didn't work, and they had to do a procedure where they took my fibula, broke it 3 times, or else I was supposed to be an AK2. After that, I just started getting involved in these tournaments, these events. After a while, I grew up next to a guy, a great guy in the region. His name is Bob Buck. He started the Eastern Amputee Golf Association. He's started the First Swing program. And finally, eventually, after being an amputee for probably 12 or so years, he got me involved to start playing in these amputee tournaments. And from them, you know, I've never turned back. It's great. It's great people, you know, great friendships that you meet, you know, that you make from these. I would have never met Kenny or Chad if I wouldn't have started playing in these, and it's a blast.
So I'll ask you the same question I asked Kenny. You go back to, you said 7 years old?
Seven, yeah.
So you didn't have the opportunity to make a conscious
Don't
decision.
Don't believe a word he says.
Hey, the security around here is terrible.
I do, buddy.
Good. You go. You don't make this conscious decision.
I did, though. My family, I could have had it amputated right away, and my family chose to have a bone salvaged bone on it. And then once the screw got infected, they gave me the option to do it, and then I chose to have it amputated. And that was when I was 9, was when I had it.
You're still in single digits. I mean, yeah. this is a tough call to make at that age, right?
You know, it, being a kid, it was, what can I do stuff? Oh. You know, when can you do stuff quicker? You know, I was more concerned about going and playing with my friends than...
Get me out of the hospital. Yeah. And get me out there.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to dig into what golf has done in your life here in a second, but, you know, Chad, you're the last one. Share your story with us.
Yeah, I was in the United States Army and was deployed to Iraq in 2006, and then April 2007, I lost my leg by a roadside IED, roadside bomb. So, yeah, it's, you know, not a big, long story, but... Was in the Army. And
well, I have a friend from the Folds of Honor Foundation, Ed Polito. Maybe you've met Major Ed.
Yep.
Who will take us back to the moment when the bomb went off, the explosive device went off and nearly killed him and blew his leg off. And he describes it as a slow motion scene of chaos and dust and dirt and shock and wondering what in the world just happened. He didn't really know. He didn't know at the time, but his leg was gone. He just was in a haze. Is that you too?
Similar, yeah. It when the explosion went off, I was knocked unconscious for about between 30 seconds and a minute. So when I came to, I remember hearing the guys in the truck around me saying, "Is everybody okay?" And the blast was just big enough to penetrate the truck through the floorboard. It just happened to be directly under my left leg. And the floorboard kind of mushroomed out and ended up fracturing my right leg and pinned it up against the center console. So the guys got out of the truck and came around to the driver's door where I was at. And at that same time, the medic from the truck behind us had come up. And I remember the medic radioing to our platoon sergeant that my leg was gone. And, you know, when the guys were asking if everyone was okay, I remember it was almost like my legs were asleep. I wasn't in pain, wasn't in shock. It was just kind of a, you know, what happened, you know, still in a blur.
So adrenaline was still doing its thing.
Yeah, and I was just coming, you know, from being unconscious for just a little bit. But so when he said that my leg was gone, you know, it kind of set in at that point, okay, my leg got blown off from this explosion, and I started to feel the pain, started to go into shock a little bit, but the medic did a great job and got me out of the truck. My right foot was pinned, so I had to reach down and yank it out, get it unstuck, and then the medic got me hooked up to the IV and you know, got me some fluids, and the medevac, the helicopter ended up coming in really quick. I mean, the 9 line they did on me was very fast, and so they got to me pretty quick. Yeah, I remember them carrying me to the helicopter and kind of going into shock from there. And one of the last things I remember was just hearing the helicopter come in and then woke up in Germany.
That's what I was going to say. At some point you wake up and a whole new world is introduced to you.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the next several months were a blur just because you're on so many medications and painkillers.
Just want to say hello to you. Good to see you, my friend.
You too.
You doing okay?
Yeah.
All right.
But yeah, you're on a lot of medication, and it wasn't until a few months later when I was going through therapy, you just kind of wonder what's going to happen from here on out. And, you know, you go through a lot of depression, a lot of what-ifs, and, you know, that's kind of where golf was introduced to me at. So,
well, I'd like to kind of talk with all three of you about moving forward. So for you, it was a young time.
Funny you say that.
For you, you're 9 years old, so you've got a little more time to grow up and become accustomed to playing on one leg, that kind of thing. It's happened a little bit later for you, and for you, this was not a conscious decision. You would probably not have chosen to give up your leg. Well, thank you for your service. I don't say that lightly. I mean that.
Thank you.
And here you all are in Frankenmuth, the home of chicken dinners and buttered noodles, and a really good golf course on a late August day playing in the national championship. So how in the world do you decide, you know what, I'm going to give this golf thing a crack? And what was it like when you first started? Because I would guess there was some learning curve involved in balance and all the different aspects of a golf swing. Let me start with the champ.
I live by a motto that says live life without limitations. I mean, you can get dealt bad cards in your life, which pretty much everyone here has. You know what I mean? You've been in a bad situation like Chad where you don't expect it and it's happened, or like Adam and myself, you get diagnosed with cancer. But it's those that can get through that and not let it slow you down and press it every day and push forward through the barriers and, you know, move forward with that. And that's what you do. If you let it hold you back, you'll be a couch potato, and there's a lot of people that do it. But you can't let it stop you.
What'd you shoot today?
76.
See, now that makes me irritated.
He shot 75.
You shot 75?
I did, yeah.
And
I don't
you're not going to share your number?
I don't even want to talk about it. I'm the most disabled out of all these groups. They call me a paper cut just because I'm below the knee, but I'm more disabled than they are. I got one more disability than they do.
Is there a, I guess you would call it kind of gallows humor to a degree, where those of you who are dealing with similar conditions can poke some fun at each other, and you've got different terminology and different degrees of disability?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have in mind
taken in the, explosion and kind of taken from me, not by choice. What I've learned is you have to have a sense of humor about it. You know, any disability, whether that's amputation or, you know, cerebral palsy, whatever the case may be, if you, just like Kenny said, if you can't learn to laugh at yourself, you're just going to be in depression, you're going to be a couch potato, and it's not a good way to live life. You know, so being at these things, it's great to hear other people's stories, how they handle stuff, how they get through stuff. This tournament's so great in that sense because you get to hear different stories and how people deal with stuff. So it's a great tournament.
And on your shirt, I see the Faraday Troops First Foundation logo. Has that been a part of your life?
It has, yeah. David Faraday from, you know, Golf Channel and NBC, he's got a huge heart for veterans. And I get involved with organizations that help wounded veterans and people with disabilities as often as I can. And in fact, the three of us here, along with Kelly Valentine, have started Moving Forward, which is a nonprofit that helps people with disabilities through the game of golf. The David Faraday and Troops First Foundation was definitely one of those that first helped me. I was introduced to them after I picked up golf, but they kind of picked up where others left off and just helped me as a wounded veteran. But in my opportunities and experience through the game of golf, I'm at a point now where I can help give back, and that's really what a lot of these tournaments do, are helping other people get through issues. And, you know, I've been coming to these since 2009, and I know these guys have been pretty close to that. I think 2010, yeah.
So there's a fraternity of brothers.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you get to know one another, and you get to share stuff and help inspire younger kids through this great game. That it's all these are great tournaments. Yeah.
It's a great peer group, and I look at it like that. And it's funny because when I got involved in it, I started playing through Bob Buck because I called him, and I started playing with him, and he introduced me to the Eastern Regionals. And there's a few tournaments up in the East, and I'm from New Jersey originally. And you go there and you meet people and you hear their stories and you hear, you know, how they got through issues of, you know, whatever it be, sores on their leg or, you know, their legs coming loose, how to put a pad in so it'll fit you better. But when you're going through it on your own and there's no amputees in your family, so to speak, you don't know what to do. And everyone, like I said before, everyone's gone through it and they help you. And when I started, I was asking so many questions because I didn't know. Now, like, I'll go to Easterns and the younger kids come up, they ask me now. And it's so good to give back and help people because I've been through it now. And I still have issues with it where I'll ask older guys that have been through it or, you know, just talking about the game and what they do as I'm getting older now, how they progress through it. And, yeah, I call it a great peer group. And I'll travel anywhere to sit with these guys to just see how they're doing. And we talk all the time. I see Adam a lot. We play a lot of golf together. Chad, because he's out from Boise, it's not as much. We don't see him. So here we get the chance to see him and hang out, and it's great to see him, you know, and hang and talk and see what's going on in his life.
Let me ask the two older guys a question here first. I don't know if they're older or not, but I'm going to go with that.
They're older.
That's what I thought you were going to say. Did either of you or both of you play golf before your amputation?
I did, yeah. I played a lot of golf, yeah.
Okay,
I was very competitive.
Let's talk some techniques, some X's and O's.
Mm-hmm.
You went through a considerable upheaval to your balance and your rhythm and the weight transfer and all that. So let's go to the range. First time you tried it with a prosthetic leg. Did you fall over?
No, I just put the ball on the ground. I actually didn't go to a range. I went and teed it up and played. And I shot 98. I never shot in the 90s before. Even when I first picked the game up, I shot 98 and I took my leg back to Long Island and I threw it at my prosthetist and I was like, I don't shoot in the 90s, fix it. I don't know what to do. And I shot in the 90s the first two times I played, and it's just time. It's patience is the biggest word I can use, because if you're not patient with it, you're in for a rude awakening.
It's a learning curve,
It's a big learning curve, yeah, because I had to learn how to walk again. I mean, I limped on my leg so bad. Like, when I took my leg off, my pelvis was an inch and a half crooked. Because I limped so bad when I had my leg, because it was a bone wrapped in skin, and it was just so painful. So, I mean, I had to learn how to walk again all over with a leg that I trusted, because mine was so beat when I had mine. you know.
Why golf for you? Why are you addicted to this game?
Because it's a great game, and you can play it when you get older, as I'm getting now. And, you know, it's just, it's a lot of fun. I can run if I wanted to, but running's overrated to me. You know?
Why is that drawing such laughter from your crowd?
I've never seen you run ever.
Well, no, I have a running leg.
For the 10 years that I've known you.
But no, I
have a running leg. When have I ever seen you in that?
I don't choose to wear it. But, yeah, I mean, I work out a lot, and I take good care of myself. Yeah. But, you know, golf is my passion now.
All right, let me ask you a silly question, then. Is there such a thing as a golf leg?
No. There's
a running leg.
Like, this leg has a golf version.
I feel like it's whatever you're comfortable in. Whatever. Because there's so many different... I mean, for you guys, it's different than me because you have your knees.
We're missing two joints. Yeah, he's missing. Yeah. That's why he's a paper cut.
They call me a paper cut.
It is different with everybody. Like he said, it's kind of whatever you're comfortable with. You know, you see some balonies that come out with a running blade with a tennis shoe on the bottom of it just because it's got a little more give.
There's different. For balonies, at least, I mean, there's different feet, there's different flexes, there's different rotators. So there's so much that goes into it. So it's really just whatever is comfortable for the person.
Preference, yeah.
Yeah, it's, yeah, newer technology is actually coming out with. There's some companies that are coming out with golf modes in a leg, the microprocessor knees.
Did you play golf before your injury?
I didn't. Very, very little. It was
not a competition, sir.
No, definitely not. It was.
Hey, man, how are you? It's good to see you.
Yeah, I played college baseball before I joined the Army,
right.
And so our baseball team would do golf fundraisers, and so like my senior year, I got to play. We had four seniors on the team that. It was more so a driving contest, you know, see who could hit it the furthest.
Hit it long at
a
range.
Yeah, so I played a handful of times. But when I picked up the game of golf, it was, you know, being a baseball player, the baseball swing transitioned pretty well for me to the golf swing. And so that helped me, you know, and I've got pretty decent hand-eye coordination, so that also helps. But it was a struggle. I mean, I don't know exactly what I shot the first time I played, but, you know, going out to the range, it was just, for me, it was one of those things. I hit a couple on the sweet spot, and I was like, man, I could get used to that. And, you know, just kept kind of working and trying to get better at the game. And I think this game for people with disabilities is so great is because of the handicap system. You can have a good match with anybody, regardless of, you know, if you regularly shoot in the hundreds, if you have an established handicap, you can still have a good game with even a scratch player. I mean, given the appropriate amount of strokes, you can have a good, friendly, competitive match. And, you know, this tournament out here is stroke play, so it kind of determines who's the best golfer. But it's just it's a great lifetime sport, as Kenny said. You can play it until the day you die. But for people with disabilities, it just gets you out, kind of focused on something else outside of your disability or life problems, which has been so great, you know, probably for all of us and wounded veterans. It gets them out of the hospital, and so it's just a great lifetime sport that anybody can enjoy.
I think a lot of our listeners would expect to hear you reporting scores that were quite a bit higher than 75, 76, and redacted. But you guys are playing some good golf. You're playing it on a really good course. This is kind of my home course when I'm not traveling. And you're playing it on a very windy day. So there's nothing wrong with 75, 76. In fact, I have to ask you what you did on number 13, because I have deposited more balls into those hazards than most people have ever done so. So
I feel good about that. I mean...
About me putting balls in the hazards?
Yeah, no, I didn't.
A lot of people do.
No, I didn't do that. No, but I mean, today was, you guys can agree with it. It was so hard because the wind was coming in so, and after all the rain, the ground here is so soft. So there's no roll.
Yep.
And then you have, what do you say, 20 mile an hour winds coming in your face?
Easily.
20 to 30?
It was a 20 with gusts up to 30.
But I mean, it was a three club wind. I feel like it was going in there.
Yeah. You didn't answer my question, though. What'd you make on 13?
Oh, five.
That's not bad. That is a five
that was,
today.
I mean, that for me, that was par.
Is that from the tips, or where'd you guys play 13?
Flags.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a full five. That's a five on a calm day from back there.
So, I mean, making a five, I was like, listen, I planned on making bogey on that hole.
My career average is like six on that stupid hole. We did a commercial about how nightmarish it is.
It's tough to look at.
What'd you do on 13?
I made five. I had to lay up, though, because I couldn't get to the green in two because I didn't tee off with driver because I didn't want to put it in the water.
What'd you hit off the tee?
Hybrid.
Oh, yeah, on a windy day.
Chad, I'll tell you, because I played with him today, my putt hung on the lip. Because the wind was blowing so strong, he goes, leave it there for 10 seconds, it'll blow in.
It was right on the lip. He almost made it outstanding four there. I ended up making a four after a poor drive. It was, you know, I found the fairway, and I'm fortunate I've got enough distance that I got to the green in two from 230 out.
Into a two or three club win. Pretty impressive.
It was a really good four. There's no question about that. That's definitely a hole, especially with today's wind. I think anybody that walks away with a five or better there is happy.
Yeah. You make four, you pick up a shot and a half on the field there.
Easily.
Well, I mean, five is par on that hole.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes me feel better, too. If it weren't for me, those two hazards would only be about 4 inches deep. That's how many golf balls I put in there. I appreciate you guys sitting down and chatting with me. It's good to hear your stories. I'm glad you're playing, and I'm going to remind myself now, if I see you on the golf course, not to play you for money, because you're both shooting lower numbers than I am, and I don't have any excuses. So, good stuff. Thanks,
guys. Right, thank you.
As we make the turn on this edition of the Four Golfers Network podcast, give me 60 seconds to tell you about another podcast I host, because even though it has nothing to do with golf, it does have the potential to greatly improve your game off the course. If you like inspiring, uplifting, interesting stories, the Big Impact Podcast needs to be a part of your podcast subscription world. Every Wednesday, I interview someone with an awesome story to tell. Sometimes the guest is famous, while other episodes have featured someone you've never met. But every week, our goal is to inspire thought and engage in positive conversation at a time when that sort of thing is sorely needed. It's the Big Impact Podcast, and I sure hope you'll check it out on Apple Podcasts and everywhere else podcasts are found. You'll also find the entire archive of episodes for free at BigImpactPodcast.com. Tracy Raymond has been a guest on the program before, but it's the first time we've met in person for the United States Adaptive Golf Association. And we sit here in Frankenmuth, Michigan at the beautiful Fortress Golf Course where the national championships are taking place. So let me ask you this before we meet some of your competitors. What's it like to see all this come to reality and have the national championships here?
It's just very exciting. I've been playing in this tournament for over 4 years with the golf course here at the Fortress, and I mean the staff here has just been exceptional. The reason I picked the area and the course, I mean, first of all, the Fortress, if you played here, you know it is really one of the best in the country, in my opinion. I mean, I don't think there's a bad thing to say about it. And then the venue, as far as Frankenmuth, there's all the little shops and places to go see, and so much for everybody to do, and spots to hang out and get together, and it's just wonderful to have all my brothers and friends and from all around the world, you know, coming to this event here in Frankenmuth, Michigan.
Well, you're not only in charge of the event, the director of competition and the tournament and all that, but you're an amputee yourself. What's the story behind the loss of your left leg?
Well, I had a construction business back when I was 26 years old. Ladder had fell off my work truck onto I-75 by the Clio exit. I got out to get the ladder out of the road so no one hit it or got hurt. Looked, it was clear. A semi was in the middle lane, went to the fast lane to give me room, and when he did a pickup, passed him on the right. When I bent on, picked that ladder up, and was boom, lights out. And so a guy behind had seen everything and told me that, you know, that had happened. I flew 100 yards. My dad found my ankle bones the next day in the ditch after the cops already had combed the area. My left shoulder severely dislocated, and I could only lift it barely to parallel without assistance. I had a hole in my side so deep you could fit a baseball. My jaw was broken in two spots. I broke my right leg. Head was bigger than a basketball. I lost all my blood plus two pints. 2% chance to live. I was in a coma for a week, out of the hospital in 24 days, and played golf on a rickety prosthetic 3 months later, and every day's a good day. I never woke up worrying, oh, poor me, or my leg's gone. It's not growing back. There's no sense of sitting around whining about it. Just, you know, kick butt and just keep moving in life. And, you know, if you stay positive, positive things happen, and that's just how I believe life works.
Had you been a golfer before the accident?
Yeah, I was a decent player, and actually the year I got hurt, my father and myself won our golf league. I won another one, and you know, I was probably a low 80s shooter at the time, but since my accident, I've had like 12 different surgeries, and I would recover in the summer. So I've been a golf professional, actually, for about the last 15 years, and I do lessons at Briar Ridge in Mount Rose. Hmm. Like this year, my prosthetist is our title sponsor, Bremer Prosthetics, for the event. And I mean, I just can't say enough about what they've done for the event and how involved they are. And you know, that group there particularly is like, if I have an issue on Saturday night, they'll meet me Sunday morning at 6 to just make sure I'm taken care of. And I don't think everybody has that, but I'm definitely blessed to have our title sponsor be so wonderful.
How hard was it for you to relearn the game now that your foundation had been cut in half?
Yeah, it was definitely a pretty good adjustment. You know, I mean, at first, you know, when I was younger, I mean, I could catch the ball 340 if I really caught it good. And, you know, initially out of the gate, you know, it was 200-yard swings. And but with quite a bit of practice and determination and what we like to call golf therapy, which anybody can play golf and at whatever your disability. I've really worked at it, and now I would say my 5-wood is 250, 260. My 3-wood can go 290, and my driver can go 280 to 330. Just depends how I catch it, and the score really is how well you putt.
Can I borrow that thing for a minute? My driver doesn't go that far. Maybe that's the key.
Yeah, right. I put a 4-iron in my bag this week and got rid of my hybrids. I lengthened my 4-iron by 3.5 inches and took the toe up a couple degrees, and that's been my go-to all week. And it's good for 230-ish off the deck, and if I hit it off a tee, it's like a good solid 250, 260 straight down the middle. So it's definitely been a beneficial club to add this week for this course.
What did you shoot today?
It was poor. I had 4 double bogeys and shot 81.
With 4 doubles?
Yeah.
That's not all bad. Now, who's this young shark sitting here next to you?
This is Brandon Canisi. We met at the United States Disabled Golf Association in Florida back in May, and he was just, we got paired together, and just such an impressive player. And he's actually one of my para, I'm the United States para golf team captain, and I had to have this guy on my team. And so he is one of our para golf team players, and we've been going around the country doing exhibitions and clinics for different kids and people with disabilities to help them come to the game of golf. And we've been just trying to showcase all of our talents and just trying to drum up support for our ultimate goal with this tournament and all the tournaments we do of golf being in the Paralympics. And actually this week we had Beth Major here, who is the second highest ranking official for the USGA, and so they came to observe our tournament the last 3 days, and she's been really wonderful wanting to be involved with what we're doing, and going to really help us achieve some of our goals. I'm really trying to put together a plan at this point to get golf into the Paralympics, obviously, but we're going to do an exhibition, I think, in Japan at the Olympic course in 2020. But Brandon is one of our players, and I really expect great things out of him. Brandon.
Brandon, before we tell your story, what'd you shoot today?
It was a rough day for me. It was the first full day seeing the track, so it's a beautiful track.
Yeah.
I shot a 94 with a 9 in there. I mean, and I had 2 birdies. I holed out a bunker shot from about 20 yards, and then I had a true birdie fairway green 1 putt on 15. But
All that being said, a 94 with a 9 is not all that bad.
Yeah.
Especially considering.
I know my expectations. I have high expectations of myself. I know my abilities. I can get out there and I can shoot in high 70s or low 80s. I'm usually a low 80s to mid 80s player. So when I shoot 94, I expect a lot better of myself.
Sure.
You
realize you're trying to play this game without hands, right?
For sure.
Okay.
Yeah, but I don't, you know. I don't believe in excuses, you know. If you believe in yourself in this game, you can you can do anything. You can play. You can excel. And it's all mental.
Yeah. Well, I kind of, you know, lightheartedly said that, but the truth is that is the disability you're dealing with. How did that come about? Was it from birth?
Birth, yeah, that was birth effect. I was a twin. My mom didn't know she was pregnant. The doctors gave her something to bring on her period. Came to find out that she was actually pregnant with twins. What they gave her got rid of my twin and my hands in the process.
Wow.
So, I mean, I picked up a golf. I've played sports my entire life. I've never viewed myself any different from any kid. Picked up a golf club about six to eight years old. My grandfather's golf club I actually tucked underneath my arm, and that's how I kind of held it steady. And then I grew older, and I said, I want to play golf again. So we made longer golf clubs so that I could do it the same exact way, just hold it underneath my arm. And it works on most days.
So that's how you swing now, right? I actually need to see him swing a golf
see
club.
My clubs, they're about almost 50 inches long. They come up to my chin.
So you anchor them kind of under your armpit.
Under my lead arm, yeah, I'm a lefty. So it goes under my right armpit, and then I kind of just hold. It's a every grip on my clubs are 17-inch putter grips. So my hands sort of meet at the bottom of the grip. It's a huge grip. And then it's all body rotation, one connected motion.
You know, we, growing up, we all have those junior high moments where that's a cruel crowd, man. Right. Did you ever take guff for having the disability?
Luckily, I did not. I grew up in a community, and I'm not sure if it was just who I was and why, like, that they didn't give me crap for it. But I've played sports my entire life. I beat most of the kids that were in my school. I played video games. I beat them in that. I mean, they saw that it never got to me, and it didn't lessen my abilities to do anything. So they kind of treated me like one of their own, if not even higher up, because there were two instances I can think of where someone went to make fun of me or say something, and everyone in the school like shamed them and was like, listen, that's our boy. Like, don't even start. You will not like going down that path. But it's unfortunate that there are people out there that are being made fun of, and it's something that, you know, should never happen. Everyone has their own battles, whether you can see it or not. And I think it's about just coming together, and that's why we're here for this great game of golf and this great thing that we're doing here in Michigan. It's just it's wonderful.
You said you hold out a bunker shot. I'm curious, which aspects of your game do you think struggle the most because of the length of the clubs and having to anchor them underneath your arm?
For me, it's distance. I'm an accuracy guy. I can usually, you know, on my good days, I can put the ball anywhere I want it to, but being anchored underneath my arm, I can't generate that much club head speed. Right now, usually my speed's anywhere from 70 to 80. I mean, you're not going to get much distance out of that. You got to hit the center of the club. But like I said, I can get out there and shoot high 70s, low 80s. So I know that it's capable. And it's like Tracy said, it all comes down to the putts. If you're rolling the putt, if you're rolling the ball in the hole, the score will be lower.
The thrill of competition is, I mean, the butterflies come, the heart rate goes up a little bit as you step onto the tee. And here at the Fortress, of course, eventually everybody's got to play number 13, which nobody enjoys playing. Did you find, and I know you've competed before.
This is actually only my second
tournament. Okay, so did the butterflies get you today?
Not exactly. I mean, I kind of thrive when I feel those butterflies. I like, it kind of makes me focus a little bit. If I get too comfortable with buddies and stuff, I'll start, you know, I'm not paying attention, I'm not focused enough. And so I kind of like that pressure. I kind of like, you know, people watching me, kind of makes me focus in on what I'm doing. Yeah, I love the competition. I mean, it's friendly competition. We're all out here to have a great time and to, I mean, everyone out here is so talented. It's so amazing to see how everyone gets the job done. Everyone's different backstory, but we're all here for the same purpose, and it's amazing.
Pleasure to meet you. Thanks for sharing your story. Tracy, congratulations to you for bringing this thing together, and it is inspiring. I visited with a few other players. We're going to hear from them next. Who all have their own unique journey to be here today. Some have served in the military and lost a limb. Some have dealt with cancer. You were born as God intended you to be born, which is sometimes hard to remember.
He gives his strongest battles to his toughest battles to his strongest warriors.
There you go. I like the way you put that. It's good to meet you.
Thanks. Good to meet you.
There are so many golf podcasts on the market these days, it's almost like a double stack, double shotgun charity outing where you know it's going to take all day to sort through and find the winner. We would love to have your help rising up in the search results when people are looking for golf podcasts. So if you don't mind, please go into iTunes and give us a 5-star rating for the Four Golfers Network podcast. It would mean a lot, it would help a lot, and the whole process is way quicker than a 6-hour round. For me, there are several takeaways from these conversations. I am blessed, but I'm not special. My bogeys don't meet as much or hurt as bad in light of seeing how the game can help inspire others, and I definitely don't want to play any of these guys for money. Thanks so much to the Fortress for hosting this national event and to the guys for doing what guys do, competing without excuses. I'm hoping to employ more of that in my own game in the days ahead, thanks to you guys. Until next week on the next edition of the Four Golfers Network podcast, I'm Bill Hobson, hoping you all hit everything right down the middle without excuses.
If you're enjoying this episode of the Four Golfers Network, be sure to check out our other podcasts, The Big Impact, celebrating inspiring people and their stories, and The Marriage Doctor, helping couples improve the quality and health of their I Do years. You can find all of the podcasts from Hobson Digital in iTunes, Google Play, or online at HobsonMedia.com.